because that's the official one.
This is an interview with Adam and Morris Perkel.
Yeah. Yes.
Bootmakers at their shop in Crown Street.
So you can make it on Adam. Make it on Adam.
All right.
Yes, because everybody knows me in the last 60 years, Adam.
But you were telling
no,
me that's...
because it's the official, you know, on the passport, is Isaac.
Isaac. And when were you born?
21.
And whereabouts were you born?
In Poland.
Whereabouts in Poland?
Stronov. MSZCZONVIC.
And was your father a bootmaker?
No. He had a very big store, something like Kmart here.
Yes.
Everything, all for birds and for funerals, for everything, you know, for weddings, a haberdashery store.
And that was in that town you mentioned where
yes,
you were born?
Yes.
And what was your father's name?
Ezreal.
And your mother?
Esther.
And how did you come to be in Australia?
How come? My uncle, my mother's youngest brother, came to Australia in 1912. 1912.
What brought him here?
Well, they came from England. Because my grandfather sent away my mother's oldest son to England in 1905. Because the Russian army used to take 14-year-old boys for 25 years to the army. So my grandfather sent him over to England. He escaped from Poland because it belonged to Russia, Poland, in that time. So he escaped and he sent him over to England in 1905. In 1905, and he was afterwards, he became the president from the Esperanto Society in the world. He was a very good friend of Dr. Zamenhof. He had a bookstore with all the rare manuscripts from the world.
In London?
In Liverpool. Yes. And then in Manchester also.
And what made him come out to Australia?
He didn't come out to Australia, but he stayed in England. But he took over the whole family, my mother's side family, to England, the brothers and sisters. So the younger brother came over here to Australia. He sent him over to Australia in 1912. Before the First World War. He lived in Wollongong and he was a very successful man in Wollongong. He had properties there, half of Wollongong belonged to him.
What was his surname?
Applebaum, Maurice Applebaum.
Are the Applebaums still in Wollongong?
No. All the children died already. Mm-hmm. His son was the leader, he introduced the NZ and the Swiss Air to Australia. He was a squadron leader during the war in England from the RAAF. And then it was about 20 years ago when he introduced the Swiss Air to Australia. So the
he was director of the Swiss Air.
But listen. So he was the director of the Swiss Air, and from Swiss Air, the chief from Switzerland came over to Australia. So my uncle entertained him in Huskisson because he had a summer residence in Huskisson, and during the barbecue, my cousin just collapsed and died. He was 52 years old.
Oh, dear.
That's the one.
Very famous Alex Applebaum.
You're very famous in your own right, the pair of you as well.
So my ego does go up.
How did you come to be in Australia?
How? Just before I survived the Second World War. I survived concentration camps, three concentration camps, and I came to Italy. In Italy, I was working there in the film industries. I portrayed a German officer in the war films in Italy.
How did you feel portraying a German?
Because I was in Germany during the war.
Which camps were you in?
I was in Mauthausen, Melk, Ebensee. I was liberated from the Americans in Ebensee.
Thank you,
or
she or he?
Neuter.
So it's off.
Thank you very much.
And I was 2.5 years in Italy. I was working also for the United Nations, for UNRWA, United Nations Relief Organization. And we were in a band. We used to give concerts all over Italy to all the displaced persons camps.
What instrument did you play?
Trombone.
Huh.
Why do you play?
And then that was in 1945 I came to Italy. In 1947 I got married in Italy with also a Polish girl. And we had a choice to go to America, we had a choice to come to Australia. But our uncle, my mother's youngest sister, came here in 1929. The one from Wollongong brought them over here to Australia in 1929. We also were supposed to come in 1929, but
Our little brother
was born, and we were very successful. My father was a very successful businessman there in Poland. So he was waiting there until and then the war broke out. So we couldn't come to Australia at that time.
But did you mention Harold Laski?
No, don't.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
So I came in 1947 when I got married. I chose Australia because I had two uncles from the family. And we still had the uncle in London. So he found out that I'm alive in 1945 through the Red Cross.
Did you know your brother was alive then?
No, I didn't know from my brother and my oldest brother. I didn't know who was alive. But afterwards I found out my uncle from England wrote me that two brothers are still alive. But I came to Australia in 1947.
Where did you come to?
To Sydney. Oh yes.
Sydney.
No, I came to Wollongong to my uncle, but after a month, I didn't stay in Wollongong. I wanted to go to Sydney to be in my trade.
And what is your trade?
When I was 30 years old, I used to go to school in the morning, and from 8 o'clock till 1 o'clock. Afterwards, we came home. We had lunch, because in Europe we used to have the main meal during the day, lunchtime. So I had lunch, and then I went. My father was a very wise man. He said, look, children, you won't get lost in your life if you will have a trade. So we went to a man what he used to design shoes, and I went over to learn the trade. And my father had to pay. It's not like in Australia. That in Australia, that they get straight away, you get the wages for our apprentice. The first 2 years, he had to pay.
2 years.
Yes, to teach us to trade.
Oh.
The only benefit what we had from the boss was a pair of shoes for Christmas and a pair of shoes for Easter.
Did you choose to be a bootmaker, or did your father
it's
say
not a
that
bootmaker.
Was?
We choose the designing, shoe designing.
Excuse me. But did you pick that trade, or would you like to have done something else at that point?
No, we learned that trade, because that trade was just, you know, I like designing, because I'm a painter also, artist.
Oh, are you?
Yes, I've got here to show you there. In the hall there.
All right, I'll have a look. Ah.
And so we learned the trade. In the war, there's the war broke out. When the war broke out, so 2 weeks after the war broke out, the first bombardment of our city was our whole house, a three-story house, with the store. Everything was bombed to the ground. And my mother and my youngest brother were burned alive in that time, in 1939, just 2 weeks after the war broke out. And then we, during the war, in the first month, so we were in Warsaw,
also ghetto,
until the Germans came in to conquer Poland. And we went back to the city, to our city from Warsaw, and we came there and everything was bombed. So my father and my sisters and brothers went over to my oldest sister. She was about 45 kilometers from our city. And so we walked, because it was no communications in that time. We walked the 45 kilometers there. And then we decided, the Germans started to take, you know, to Arbeitskamps, to, you know. So we decided to go to Russia, away from Poland and away from the Germans.
So Russian occupied Poland.
No, the Russians occupied Poland.
Myself and him.
Once. Yes. One second, you will be on to view
yes,
it afterwards.
Yes,
so you won't.
I'm just going to pause it.
Up to the war.
Yes.
With the war broke.
Yes, yes.
And then we went over there, so we tried to go to Russia, and we couldn't, because the Germans were on one side and the Russians on the other side from the river Bug. So we couldn't go through. So I decided the next morning, so my brother, I told him, you go to Russia and I will go back to Warsaw, because my parents were already from Warsaw in that time, because they took over from all the little cities around Warsaw, and they put them into Warsaw ghetto. I had papers there, not as a Jew. I had papers as a Volksdeutsche, that means a German born in Poland. I had the papers from a caretaker. He was a Volksdeutsche. He was a German born in Poland, and his son went to school together with me, and he gave me his papers. But he got killed during the bombardment in Warsaw, so he gave me his papers, and I was as a son to him. And I lived outside the ghetto, and I looked after, because I was smuggling in provisions from the ghetto from outside the ghetto to the ghetto. I bribed the police and the gendarmes every morning. We went through the street, through a tramway, went through the ghetto, I used to throw down the sackful of corn and meat, you know, sugar and oil, different potatoes. And from that, my father and my brothers and sisters could live in ghetto. That was from 1940 until 1941.
Mm.
I lived outside the ghetto as a Christian, and outside the ghetto in 1941, so I took off from my, well, one sister and my brother and my father, I took them over to Petrichow, to southern Poland, where my oldest brother's wife's whole family was there, so I took them over. I bribed and I paid there quite a big sum of money to the gendarmes, so I took them over to Petrichow. In Petrichow in 1941, so they started, the Germans started to take to the concentration camps from Petrichow. So my father said, look, you can save your life instead to stay here with us, because I gave him some money because I was working there also.
Working in your boot trade?
No. I was working for, I took, smuggled some from war, from around the towns. So I used to buy some food to bring it in to the, it was an open ghetto, not a closed down like in Warsaw. And when they wanted to close it, so my father said, look, you save your life, you go.
So I went over. You know what a ghetto.
We're back in business.
Schools.
Where did I stop? Yeah.
You were telling
me.
So
I went over. I went over to Germany, and I was working in Germany, in Henschelwerk, in ammunition factory. They used to make the Junker planes, and they used to make the locomotives and the panzers. And I was staying there until 1944. Germany. I was working there. In 1944, in the night time, the Gestapo came over to our place where I was there. And they took away from the whole block everyone to an Arbeitskamp.
Including you?
No, I didn't know that I'm a Jew.
You didn't know?
I didn't know.
Oh, they didn't know, no.
No, I didn't know.
Were you worried during this time?
All the time,
you
know. But it came to the time that I was already dreaming in German. Because I was, since 1941 to 1944,
You spoke
was
only
in German, and I spoke only German. You see, I didn't mix with the Poles. I didn't mix with the other ones. So.
Was your German accented?
No, I speak perfect German.
Do you speak German?
And also, yeah.
Today?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's also even if it's with accented. So I was a German born Poland because I had the papers there.
German born Pole.
It used to call Volksdeutsche.
Volksdeutsche.
So I took everyone to our Arbeitskamp, and from the Arbeitskamp, because it was somewhere from the MI5, was a girl in that block. She lives there, and I came to arrest her, but she disappeared. So they, for 30 days, every day and night, they were asking us questions. In the middle of the night, they woke us up, asked a question about a girl, and I knew her. She lived there in the same block, and so they still took us to the concentration camp. The concentration camp to Mauthausen, so after to Melk, into Abensee, and I was liberated there, and I was after I was working in Italy. And in 1947, instead to go to America, I went through America and we came to Australia.
By ship?
By ship, yes.
Was there anybody else, sorry, was there anybody else you knew on the boat, or were you on your own?
Oh, no, I didn't know anybody, you see, because it's it was about a dozen people that came from America also, you know, from the displaced persons camps. They went through America because they didn't have, in that time, the airplanes to Australia.
And you left from London?
No, I left from Palermo.
Palermo.
Italy.
Ah, straight from Italy, right.
Yes. From Palermo to New York, and in New York, I was staying there in New York with my wife's auntie just for a little while.
Your wife was with you on the boat?
No. Well, my wife was. Because we got married 3 days before we left Italy. In the honeymoon, we went to Australia on the boat. So we arrived here. So the uncle took us over to Wollongong. We stayed in Wollongong, but I wanted to start working because my uncle wanted me to settle in Wollongong. He wanted to buy me a store, and he wanted to buy me a place, you know, a cottage. But I wanted to be on my own. So we came to Australia.
Sydney.
To Sydney. And 3 months, not quite 3 months, I was working in Parkline, Headbags factory. That's from Stock and Holdings, Scheinberg.
Where was that located?
Broadway. Do you remember it?
I don't.
No.
You were not born.
Not quite then, no.
So I was working there on a machine.
That's
and then I didn't like it. And after 3 months, I said to him, I want to go back to my shoe designing.
Why didn't you like handbags?
I didn't like it because it wasn't mine, you know. Because I had the designing, I liked it, so I wanted to go back to design. So I asked around here, because Christmas time it was 2 weeks holidays there, so I asked around here. It was 5 or 6 shoemakers here in Sydney, but they used to make handmade shoes.
Only 5 or 6?
Here.
What? More.
No, some of them they were about 50 years old. 50 years. The Joneses were about 50 years.
My boss was, his father was came with the First Fleet.
Who was that came with the First Fleet?
My boss and his boss.
Yeah.
And who was that?
Jones.
Thomas Jones and Wesley Jones. In the King Street, 75 King Street.
In the city?
In the city,
yes.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So I used to go around, and I worked at Thomas Jones, or at Wesley Jones, until
we started together, yeah. That's it.
And then in 1953, I went back to America, and I stayed only 10 months. I didn't like it there.
You went there to live? Thinking
yes,
you'd live there?
Yes, because I had the permits, you know, to live in America.
Why did you want to leave Sydney?
My wife wanted to leave Sydney.
Her sister
brought her up. She was 12 years old when she went to concentration camp, and her sister looked after her. She gave her piece of bread every morning. She said, you are young, you have to survive. So it was for her like a mother, and she married us off. So she wanted to go back to the sister. She felt secured to be with her sister where her sister is. Mm-hmm. So I stayed there for 10 months, and I left my wife with my daughter in America, and I came back. We started together, and since then...
We are right. Together. Voila.
Voila. You say that with such panache. And when did you come to Australia, Maurice?
A year later.
I came 48.
And did you know each other? Did you know the other was here?
My story is different.
Different.
Ah.
When I arrived in Russia, I started to work in a shoe factory in Rostov-on-Don until the Germans started the war 22nd of June 1941. The Germans went past so fast towards Rostov, and I said, I'm not going to meet them again. I took a train and I went to the Russian Middle East, Tashkent, Uzbekistan. Uzbekistan and Tashkent, that was so many refugees that people slept in the street. There was nowhere, that so many from Russia escaped. I went to a city called Bukhara, that is in Tajikistan. And in Bukhara, I worked at my trade until the war ended, and I repatriated all the Polish citizens back to Poland.
And your trade, I'm guessing, is the trade you have now?
I lived like a king for 6 years in Russia with my trade.
When you say you lived like a king, how did you live?
People lived on 400 grams bread. I had plenty, I made plenty of money, you know, in my trade, and I could buy everything. I didn't know even my war was on.
So even,
far away.
So even though there were people living in poverty, people could still afford shoes?
No. We worked for the government, for the army, making boots for the army. So everybody helped himself. I made only one pair of shoes to sell on the market, so I could live 6 months.
And you say we. Were you in a factory at that point or in your own business?
No, not. In Russia it did not exist, your own business. That was a cartel, you know, a cartel.
A government,
yes.
Government enterprise.
Government owned small ones. So, when the war finished, they said, everybody wants to go back to Poland, go back to Poland. They supply trains, cost you nothing, everything. Yeah.
Did you ever think of staying put?
In Russia? No. I thought my parents are still alive, my brothers and sisters. I didn't know, I didn't have contact with them for 6 years.
You must have known about the concentration camps and those sorts of things.
I knew about it, yes, but...
Not as much.
Mm-hmm. The Russians had their own concentration camps.
So you went back to Poland?
Went back to Poland. Went back to my city. Nobody. Not a father, not a mother, not a brother, not a sister, nothing. A house is ruined, bombarded. So, in the meantime, I wrote a letter to Australia, Mr. Applebaum, Australia. I didn't know where and when, and he got it.
That was all you had on the envelope?
That's all.
Yeah, that's...
You got it?
Uncle from Wollongong.
So, I got in touch with him, and on the way somewhere to one city, I was talking with one fella, and I said, I'm an orphan daddy. You know, the orphan daddy got nobody. I didn't receive the uncle's reply yet. So he said, you got a brother in Italy. Well, You see, during the war, you took a train, didn't pay anything, you know. Went there to Innsbruck. It's near the border, Italian Austria. Border, in Austria. Some people killed a American soldier, and the border was closed. So couldn't go through, so went back. Went back, I met another fella. You know, we were talking, all the refugees. I said, can't go to my brother. He said, no, you got a brother in Munich. Oldest brother, he was in Auschwitz, Sachsenhausen, Oranienburg, Dachau, had a wife and two children, and survived.
He survived.
I went over to Munich. Where does he live in Munich? Munich is a big city. First Jewish man I met, I said, maybe you know Paul Perkel. Paul is my neighbor.
No.
It's coincidence.
It is extraordinary.
Yeah.
So Munich has got the Dachau Straße, that's called the famous Dachau Straße. Not far from Dachau. Oldest brother was liberated in Dachau.
Hmm.
I come to that address. Hello. Nobody there. Waiting for 2 hours. Hmm. You can imagine me.
Hmm.
And they arrived. So he arrived. We stayed in Munich until 1948. We got the papers to come to Australia because we had fathers and mothers, brother and mother's sister here. Yeah. So we went to Paris waiting for an aeroplane.
A plane?
We came by plane. Yeah, my oldest brother and I, right? Uncle paid for a fare to come to Australia by plane with the Sabena, you know, the Belgian airlines.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, we waited in Karachi for one propeller, you know, the wooden propeller. We waited in Indonesia for another propeller broke down. Anyhow, we arrived in Australia.
How did you?
And in the meantime, I met my wife in Paris. The 14th of July. The 20th of July, we got married.
That was a long courtship.
And the oldest brother and I, we arrived in Sydney, Australia. We made a permit straight away to see you. She's a French citizen, so you could not come to Australia with me.
She couldn't?
No, because I got married the 20th, in the time when I will get the papers and, you know, the permission. So she came 7 months later. Mm. And we are married for 61 years. That's it. That's the history of my life.
Could I ask you what date you were born?
15th of May, 1919.
Just last
I'm
week.
I'm 90 years old.
You're very busy. You're very... you're pacing as we're sitting here. As I'm talking to your brother, you want to get on with things.
That's it. Work is the best recipe, the best medicine in your life. If you stop working, either you get Alzheimer's disease or Alzheimer's disease.
So how do you work together?
For 61 years.
No, how? Do
what do you mean coordination? Yeah. I do this, he does that, I do that, and we both do the same thing.
And do you get on?
Of course we do.
Otherwise we would have divorced each other. We would have had to have a divorce lawyer.
Is your wife still with you?
Yeah. My wife, 9 years ago, we've been to Gold Coast International, and Christmas Eve, 4 o'clock in the morning, she went to the bathroom, fell down, hit her hip, and broke her hip.
Mm.
We waited in Southport, in the hospital for 3 weeks till we come back. 2 weeks later, they have 4 bypasses.
Oh, dear.
So my daughter come and looking after us, living with us and looking after my wife and my son and myself.
Do you live nearby?
We live in Dover Heights.
In
Dover Heights.
Dover Heights. When I came to see you last week, I asked if you lived above the shop.
No, only two minutes. 2 minutes apart. How could you live there where you're working?
Sometimes people do.
But listen, I got a family, he's got a family. And thanks God we could afford to buy our own property.
So Adam, your wife came back from America?
After 1.5 years, he came back. Because in the meantime, I built a house in Maroubra. It cost me only $4,950, a 3-bedroom house with a big garage, with a big backyard and everything.
So how do you come into the office here?
We've been for 42 years in the Hay Street next to the Capitol Theatre.
See the photos there from the Hay Street?
126
Hay Street.
Next to the Capitol Theatre.
That belonged to the City Council.
Then they sold it to Ipoh Gardens, you know, to the Japanese. And when they made Miss Saigon, they gave everybody notice. That building was occupied by the best rag industry in Australia, the most beautiful things they made. Evening gowns, men's wisdom, everything. It was craftsmen, jewelers, and bootmakers. And so they gave us notice to everybody. So the city council gave us
two shops in Ventford Avenue,
there where the hotel Vibe is, you know now?
Yes.
Yes. Didn't even charge us anything.
They did. Only the last month.
Anyhow.
Before we moved in here.
So, we wanted to buy the building. The council sold it to the hotel. They offered more money. So, we came over here, we bought that property, and we are now
18 years
members of the city council.
No. It was South Sydney, now we are
the city council. So when I'm looking around here, there must be hundreds of rolls of leather.
You come in now, I'll show you something. You ever seen shoe lasts in your life?
I have, but
how many?
I've seen one or two.
Come in.
Thousands.
Millions of them. That's my section.
So you have your separate sections?
Oh, yes. I mean, we can't work, you know. Sorry. I mean, that's not big enough. But here, we've got another 2 stories. Huh?
Do you climb those stairs every day?
Climb every mountain. That is.
Look at these wonderful. They're wooden masts.
That is for dressage. You see the polar boots and dressage. That's what we are making.
Oh, they're beautiful. They're
the only ones in Australia.
Beautiful shoes.
That's a kitchen. And more machinery.
Once was a kitchen. Look at all your
boxes. Once a kitchen. Oh, we've got a little.
And you've got a whole lot of shoe boxes with people's names.
Every customer got their own last.
Oh, look at these.
Look at that.
Oh, isn't this fantastic?
Go on. There's nobody in Australia. To have that kind
of... How many of you? This is fantastic. And you've got your last in with your car. Now, whose car is this, yours or your brother's?
It's together. I've got my own car. Oh, so you drive in? We're driving together every morning.
Who picks who up?
I pick him up, he picks me up.
So you go from Dover Heights to Maroubra to pick him up?
Not to he lives also in Dover Heights.
Ah, okay.
He lives in Portland Street, you know, the famous Portland Street where you know, the view there of the car.
I'm not familiar with the area.
No?
No,
I live in the Wallangra Road.
Is the fridge got last in it as well?
No.
It's got your... That's packed!
Now we've got one Russian man, a poor fella. He goes and he hasn't got a fridge at home, so we gave him the use of our fridge.
And he lives nearby?
Yes, in the housing commission.
Ah.
Yes.
May I take a photo of these later?
Of course!
Oh, thank you.
That's what you are here for. That's what you are paid for.
Now, I'm aware that...
We haven't got the other one. Leave that, I've got another half.
Is that a drawer full of zips?
Yeah, zippers and envelopes. Everything is under control.
I can see it's under
Even
control.
Even we are under control.
But I'm thinking, when you moved from the Haymarket in 1995, how on earth did you pack up the shop?
It cost us $12,000 to move. We didn't get the compensation from the city council. Twice we had to move. From there to Wentworth Avenue and from Wentworth Avenue here.
How did you control all of this then?
Oh, we had
if I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, we will know every skin, colour and make.
You see, we bought that when they told us that they're going to take away our shop. That was about 18 months before they took away our shop. So we bought that here. And that we had a man to make all the shelves and all the things.
Ah, of course, of course.
Because here, they used to have five lodgers.
They used to have what?
Five lodgers. The woman what had that property. So we bought that property.
But the store... I'd love to know more about your store... Back, do you call it a store back in the Haymarket?
Yeah.
Did you call it a shop or a...
Not a store. We had a bigger shop. From here to here, you know.
Across the street?
All the shops were so big.
From one street to the other.
From Hay Street through
to... Campbell Street.
To Campbell Street, yeah.
So which end would people come to when they were coming with their
shoes? Hay Street.
120 here.
Behind me, okay.
126 Hay Street.
That's at the back from the Capitol. Capitol is in Campbell Street, and we went to Hay Street.
What was, you mentioned other craftspeople there who did other businesses. What were their names?
Who remembers the names?
They are all dead.
They used to make the lampshades. A woman used to make the most beautiful lampshades.
Do you remember her name?
No.
But I've got paintings with sheep.
And the other ones are already dead.
Yes.
Mr. Koloski, he made the most beautiful evening frocks. What? Now in the
sun. The sun is doing it.
Now the other one, what he's making in the paper, it's mentioned there. He's one of the biggest evening frock manufacturers in Australia. Mm. That's all. Yeah. What's his name? He changed his name. The son. Son went with my son to get it to school.
So what hours would you work down in Hay Street?
Half past in the Hay Street. Long hours.
I worked at night when I started on my own. I worked from about 6 o'clock in the morning till 12 o'clock in the night time.
I think, Adam, when we stopped, we were talking about your hours. D- Do you work different hours here now that you're older?
I'm younger.
I know you're younger, but you're older than when you first started.
Ah.
So now that you're older people. Yes.
No, we are working only now from 7:30 till 3.
Till 3.
Here.
Enough is enough.
3 o'clock
is too much.
3 o'clock closing.
And you never take your business home?
No.
Business? No. Not even a gossip.
Is there any gossip?
Plenty. Tell me a place in the world where there's no gossip.
Exactly.
Gossip is politics, way of life, way of women's life, way of men's life. Gossip.
So during those hours that you're here, do you take time off and go to the cafes for lunch?
Yeah.
Cafe for lunch? No.
We bring our own lunches.
Women make the break, they take out. No,
if we are taking out sometimes, so we go.
Okay.
We don't take off, you know, morning tea or afternoon tea.
Because the phone...
We live a clean life. Breakfast, a small lunch, and dinner. And voila, and that's it.
What is lunch?
Lunch? One bread roll with a piece of ham or a piece of sausage and a cup of thai and three pieces of food.
You say that
every
as though it's a mantra.
Every day. Yeah.
It saves your life. That is, go for coffee. What can they give you?
You've got a little... like a little freezer bag here.
Yeah. That's my fruit. If you eat...
Oops, so you've got four
if
pieces.
If you eat that a day, you don't have to go to a doctor.
Four pieces of fruit.
Unfortunate.
Yeah.
You don't say the same thing.
It cost me a lot of money, my doctors. No.
So you've got your fridge out the back that's stuffed with food.
Yeah,
that's not yours.
No,
and
it's
that's my lunch.
A very simple ham sandwich.
That's it.
Do you spend much of your day on your feet?
All the time. Never sit down.
Never sit down? Even when you're sewing?
Only for sewing. Yeah.
On the machine.
2 minutes, 5 minutes.
About an hour. Otherwise I stand on my legs. All the time.
That's what we are making. Shoes made for walking and for standing. Yes.
You both have a great sense of humour.
If you lose your sense of humour, what's left?
That's right. So when you're working here, do you chat amongst yourselves or do you work silently?
Got the time.
You haven't got the time?
No, of course we get customers in.
We talk to ourselves. We talk when we are driving, you see.
We come together to work and go home to work.
So you both drive still?
Yeah, I don't drive anymore.
I do.
You drive?
Yeah.
So do you need glasses for your work?
Yeah. Only
not
for
me.
The machine.
Not me.
Otherwise, okay. I don't. No.
Don't wear any glasses.
And for a long,
I look
long distance
without glasses.
Long distance when I'm driving. Just started about 18 months ago.
I said I look through people without glasses.
Oh, through people.
I can drive without the glasses just as good as with the glasses.
When I first came here, you said that William Holden sat in this seat.
Just here.
What did you make for William Holden?
We made...
William Holden was in the Hay Street.
In the Hay Street, yes. But on that seat.
So you brought the seat with you.
Yeah.
Yes. We made him crocodile, snake skin,
two pairs of boots, two pairs of shoes.
And we went back... and went back to America and sit in his, you know, he had a bath. In the bath he was drinking and he died there, you remember? You don't know the story?
I don't know the story, no, no. And what
about he died? That was 2 weeks after we made him the shoot.
We made for Frank Sinatra, we made for Sammy Davis Jr., we made for the Beatles, for the Bee Gees.
So did these people come to your shop themselves?
Yeah.
Or them?
Oh, no, the Beatles were in the...
In the High Street?
No, in the King's Cross, we took the measurements.
Ah.
In King's Cross in the hotel.
Yeah. But
and
the
I came
Bee Gees,
to Australia.
The Bee Gees came over there.
When the Bee Gees came over, they didn't have to... money to pay at the
office. Mrs. Kelly was there. Mrs. Kelly was there.
Agent.
And Mrs. Kelly said, I'm sorry, boys, you'll have to wait for the deposit.
So... there was one Morris, yes.
Yeah, Morris,
yes.
The one who died.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, do you look after all the measurements, the manufacture, the accounts,
everything?
And you've got 3 stories here.
Yeah.
Did you have a multi-story place in Hay Street or just one floor?
Hay Street is, have a look from here to here, so long the shop.
And
we had another store.
We had a store there. Where they made for the guest company. We had the whole floor. We started there.
So
in our little room we started, and where the guest company is now.
And the guest company site, and the right-hand side.
Yes.
There's still the little houses there. We had our rooms.
The whole floor.
So when people customers would come, would they come to a small area like this or a bigger area?
Customers don't look for beauty.
No.
They only look for beasts.
Well, we used to go also home measurements.
And what?
Customers to take the measurements
homes.
At home.
Were these customers?
Those invalids what could not drive to our place.
We used to go home
visits.
And do you still do that?
No, not anymore.
You don't make shoes for people who...
We do,
yes.
But we tell them, take a taxi, we pay for the taxi.
So
why should I go now? You know, it's cheaper to pay for a taxi than to go over your time.
No, you see, just a matter of fact, yesterday was supposed to come one from St. Vincent's Hospital. He wanted to come at 3 o'clock. I said, I'm sorry. 3 o'clock, we're going home. So he's coming next week.
Do you always finish at 3 religiously?
Yeah. Sometimes half past two. Half past two. You've got something to do at home.
So I've never had shoes made for me, but tell me what would be the process if I was to come here and ask you to make me a pair of shoes.
Bring yourself with your feet.
we measure
you up, and that is called bespoke. Do you know the word bespoke?
What
it means?
I do.
Yes.
Handmade.
Then we make a last. We give them a try on.
Bob Carr was here. We were talking with him, and he said, "Boys, what does it mean, bespoke?" And Bob Carr is a very knowledgeable man. Not many people know what it means, bespoke. In a way, do you remember it was a film called The Bespoke Overcoat?
I don't remember that film.
You were not born.
I noticed Bob Carr calls you
boys. An English one.
We are calling custom made.
Yes. And I noticed that Bob Carr calls you boys.
Oh, yes. He spoke with us in German. he polished his German.
Yeah. When the president from Fiji used to come,
Sarat
and closed up the street from both sides, he was here telling about politics for about an hour's time. He came with the securities, you know.
Then he invited me over to Fiji, and I was in his place in the Fijian. You know the Fijian?
I do.
The hotel?
That's
what did belong to his wife.
We made
his wife's mother. So I was there for 3 weeks, not a guest.
That's remarkable.
We made him 3 pairs every year, 2 pairs of shoes and 1 pair of slippers.
Then the King of Tonga came over. There I guess.
King of Tonga. Prince Salota came here 50 years ago. She was 7 foot tall.
Heavens.
Yes. Size 22.
Buongiorno.
Come sta?
Buongiorno.
Oh, buongiorno. Bene.
I've got to...